Yeah. Strawberries. No. Strawberries. Yeah. Raspberries, unless it's like candy. Like snakes. So it's like, or like, you know, so you just get like raspberry flavor sorbet. That's better than strawberry sorbet. But as the fruit themselves, strawberries over raspberries.
So sorbet over ice cream.
Yeah. Well, no, yeah, sorbet over ice cream for sure.
Gelati?
What's the difference?
Sorbet?
Yeah, what?
Yeah, there is a difference.
Is there?
Sure, there is a difference.
That's just my ignorance. I'm going to say gelati, just because it sounds a little bit more...
So, more fruity than dairy?
It's so hard. I'd say... Because I love milkshakes, but that's not really...
What flavor?
Blue Heaven, which is nowhere else in the world.
Soda it's like rock? And soda rock?
Because that's raspberry and vanilla. That's, Soda Rock.
Yeah.
Are they still going?
Yeah.
They moved from that corner.
They're where and... Cafe Greco used to be. That's exactly where Cafe
that's
Greco
exactly
used to be.
That's exactly it, yeah.
Up there on Chapel Street with the boys.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely... I haven't been there for a while, but...
Where did you get Blue Heavens from when you were a kid?
It's what caused my sugar addiction now. So it's like, I wasn't into sugar at all. 27, I started going to Pancake Parlor. And the Swiss Mountain Malts, Blue Heaven Swiss Mountain Malts, crack.
Yeah.
Absolute crack.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny how milkshakes, milk bars used to just be milkshakes. They provide just milk.
Is that really? I just thought that that's where you would buy milk from the bar. But I didn't know that...
Milk.
Right, and then they just made them like newspapers and
ciggies, basically. I think a lot of the money they made was on
ciggies and porn mags.
Until
I remember
and porn.
One of my porn mags.
Yeah. Porn mags. Yeah.
So like I remember one of my mates. Yeah, well, my mate used to buy newspapers, but he'd slide the mags in. This is when we were like too underage to get them, so he'd just basically be stealing sex magazines. But like he just take it up to the front. Yeah, it was. It probably was. No, but that's then I started doing that, and then we'd trade it off for different things. So it was like, I remember my brother got married, and we all got given cigars, and I was like 14 or 15 or something, and then I had a cigar, but I wasn't gonna smoke it. But then I traded it with, remember the Satanist? He was a guy who was a Satanist.
Yeah.
I forgot his name, but he was only there till like year 10, I think. But the Satanist offered me two porn mags for the cigar, and I think he won out on that because they were really rubbish.
So, they weren't like Cubans.
Well, I've never smoked a cigar, but this would have been a good cigar. It was like from a wedding, so it wouldn't have been shit.
Do you reckon he still got that?
No, he would have fucking smashed it that and day. Like, because he was the kind of guy that would...
those mags really well.
Yeah, a couple times, yeah. But they weren't that great. Like, they weren't...
Was it hairy?
There was no feet in it. So I was like, no, I'm just... yeah, there was no feet. So
what's your perfect size foot?
7. Too bad I married a 9. But, nah, that's Tarantino, not me.
I had a discussion, actually, I interviewed someone else not long ago. We had a mad discussion about when I was pushing buttons. I'm like, nah, I don't give a shit, man.
Like, for me, he's the master, but...
And he, this guy, the same thing, yeah.
Yeah. And you were just telling him, yeah, he's not made a good film. That would have hurt his soul.
With my low-budget lighting and...
I love that. It's like, when I was at film school and people are like, Michael Bay's so shit, and it's like... Go make a Michael Bay film,
exactly
then.
Right.
You know, it's like, and you'd see there, and it was like something in Brunswick with like, you know, one shot locked off, and even that wasn't really kind of balanced right. And, yeah. School days.
What did you learn the craft of what you do now, and who? What do you do now? What would you say that you do?
So I'm a director, and creatively, I'm just always trying to like. You know, just tell stories, you know, whether it be through commercial, music video, narrative, it's always kind of like just trying to entertain, you know, and, you know, yeah, it might have the byproduct of selling a product at times. It's, you know, always just the fun of doing that. You know, I think where that inspiration came from, when I was a kid, I almost grew up like an only child. I was an accident child, so it's like two older brothers that could have been my dad's age. But TV was like always there for me, even through like the tough times when your family has like family turmoil. Like it was just the perfect escape. So I'd always pretend that I was like Kyle Reese from Terminator in my backyard and all that. And I think I've just always loved television. And I remember the moment where it sort of had hit like a turning point where I was watching Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and I think I had the flu and my mum didn't wake me up for the next episode. And I was just like, you know what, I'll make my own episode. So I started drawing and illustrating, and I ended up doing my own comic book of the Turtles. And then I kind of thought that was my path, but getting into graphic art and illustration, it was kind of like a hard time. I wasn't able to hit a creative peak. I was just following trends and not really setting one. And I think I hit like my limit with that. And then it just so happened that a few friends had like a camera, and we just started shooting goofy things. Like we'd watch Jackass and just do stupid shit like that. But I could do that with like no sleep. Like someone would be like, hey, 3 a.m., let's go and shoot something. And I'll be like, there. Whereas if someone wanted me to do something else, I'd be like, I need my 7 hours, 8 hours sleep. And that was when I realized that I was in the wrong kind of field. And graphic art, illustration, graphic design wasn't for me. And I really just wanted to pursue film. So went back to studying. And yeah, like it's just been... it's never been work. So whenever I go out to like events and they're like, what do you do? It's like, I always open up with I'm unemployed, because I don't really feel like I'm ever working, even though it's been really good to me financially and all that, but that's not what it's there for.
Isn't it wild how something like Jackass has inspired and moved so many filmmakers?
Yeah.
You know, it's wild that it's the lowest budget of the lowest budget, and every kid ran out and took a camera and did what they had to do.
Well, it's, you know, don't know how candid I can be, but it's like, even to the point...
United where, that.
Yeah. You know, well, that, like, you know, like, when we started doing that, it reminded me...
of renowned bush jumping.
Yeah. Well, I remember, like, we were, you know, like, when we started doing it, it reminded me of the fun times in high school, which was doing it with Adam Graham Paglia.
Skaters Don't Die.
Yeah, Skaters Don't Cry, was the other one? Rollerbladers Suck and all that. And it was just like, I remember how much fun that was, but it was even connecting people that had nothing to do with one another. It's like, I wasn't a skateboarder, you know, and yet I was hanging out with skateboarders, you know. It's like, you had drama kids that were acting and that kind of stuff, and it's just like, well, how did these people mesh together? It was just all coming together with, like, just trying to tell funny stories or, like, goofy stories. So I really enjoyed that process, and then when we started doing it and it reminded me of those days, it's like, that's what I want to do with my life, you know.
Do you, how would you see your life otherwise? Where would you be?
Geez, I'd probably be still doing the graphic art. And if that hit its peak, I would have been in a warehouse somewhere. You know, it's like, that's where I went to after so that I could study and do that. But honestly, like, I would have loved to have been a chef, but I can't cook for shit. Mm-hmm. So it's like,
what attracts you to being a chef?
I love food. That's it. Yeah. So it's just, that's it,
and you
really.
Can't cook.
Nah.
It's your best meal. Like if you're,
I can do two things.
What was the first thing you cooked for your wife now?
Miggering. Nah, it was, I definitely did it. If you crack an egg into miggering and then you mix that up, that's gourmet. Like, it's fucking great. No, I can do a good barbecue, and the first thing I did was I made her a pizza. So it's like, so I can make a good pizza.
Okay.
The dough making part is questionable, but if you get... Yeah, pretty much. No, or you get like a dough base or something like that from like 400 gradi or something.
Them that you made it.
Yeah. It reminds me of like when Airtasker came out and I was dating, and then I invited someone over to cook for them. Mm-hmm. And then I just like opened up Airtasker and looked up for people to cook for me. And there was someone that worked at Vue de Mont who was a cook, but like had a day off, and she was like, I'm pretty sure it was Vue de Mont. And she was like, yeah, I can cook it. Just tell me what ingredients you have in your house. I'm like, I got nothing. You make everything and then bring it to my house. No, she way. Did. And it was the best. That's the best Antarctica story I have. And I claimed it as my own.
Yeah, so, nice.
But being that it was a foundation built on lies, it never lasted. So,
Al Pacino or Robert De Niro?
De Niro. De Niro by far. It's like, I love Al Pacino, but De Niro by far.
Why?
I think I've just enjoyed more De Niro films. And,
okay.
You know, it's like, you think of like The Deer Hunter, you think of even just the later films, like
yeah,
the comedies,
yeah.
like even Meet the Fockers. It's like, I could just always do De Niro, but Pacino is, aside from The Godfather, I don't really, and Devil's Advocate, which is kind of
Heat.
I prefer De Niro in that over Pacino. So
they're both.
Yeah.
Right,
but the, but like Pacino's like a master, but like, and he's awesome, but I don't know, I've always gravitated towards De Niro.
If you were, so you've shot how many features?
Two so far. So one was a co-direction and one is my solo, which is the one that's coming out now.
Oh yeah, cool. Tell us
yeah.
more about that.
So this one coming out was called In God's Care. It's now called Godless, the Eastfield Exorcism.
Mm-hmm.
That was a story that sort of struck out to me. So I'd just been reading a lot about exorcisms and all that because I kind of researched the occult and I'm really obsessed with like what happens after this life. And, you know, I came across something even more horrifying, which was people dying at the hands of exorcists or people that claim that they were exorcists. Mm-hmm. So finding so many of these stories globally, there was an opportunity to tell a pretty horrific tale that wasn't the usual person gets possessed, they get the possessed person and put them in a room and then do all this kind of stuff. There was something a lot more scarier and really horrifying about being believed or perceived to be possessed, and then you've got all these people that just think through propaganda that you're speaking in tongues or speaking through the devil when you're actually just mentally ill, and that's what's happening in most cases. So that was something that wouldn't leave my side. So I tasked the writer, Alexander Anglis Wilson, who wrote this script, and we did it through lockdown. So it was just like between us opening and closing and all that, like we were just developing it. And then as soon as we got to the tail end of it, we went out and shot it. So it's been a really interesting time. So we've had ups and downs with it, but like mostly ups. The shoot was awesome, but I potentially got struck with COVID, so they were going to shut us down for 14 days, but that ended up being okay. But it was just kind of like tricky maneuvering that. But in the end, it's just been awesome. And now we're going to go to the States for the release, which it premieres there. And then globally it's being sold off. So that's kind of weird where someone else has your film and they're selling it off to other people. Like, you don't think about that part. You just want to tell the story and the creativity behind that, but then there's a whole business side to it that allows you to do another one, otherwise you're one and out.
Yeah.
So
and how was that in comparison to your
first one was a little bit more liberating in the sense of we finished uni and then it was like, hey, let's make a film to see if we can make a film. So
yeah,
there was no plan for it. It was like low stakes. There was like a very little budget. I think it might have been 80k, and it's just like, and that's nothing, that's micro budget. So we just went out, shot it, and just hoped that, you know, if it goes somewhere, great. If not, we'll just chuck it on YouTube, you know. But it was just more an exercise. But then the fact that it got picked up and then got put on Netflix was just so surreal. And then you then get into the next stage and it's like, well, am I going to be able to hit Netflix again or a streaming platform, or we're going to go to cinema and all that? So playing with a lot more money, but not that much in the grand scheme of things.
So has the first film going on to Netflix paid off, going to Netflix?
Financially, it was okay, but it was more the exposure of it. So it's like it gives you
validation.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, oh, okay, he's done something before and now.
And it's on Netflix.
Yes,
yeah.
So
YouTube, wherever.
Exactly, yeah. So it did have that, and like because it charted so well on iTunes as well, through a bit of clever marketing as well, like it allowed us to bump up the resume to then be like, hey, I've done a film before, you can trust me to do another one. So just to like the whole world's crumbling. Yeah.
So where would you because you obviously do music clips as well.
Yeah.
And your films are in the genre of horror or psychological thrillers, is that?
Yeah.
And besides obviously the financial side of things with the doing commercial stuff, how do you, like, what is it that you find that pushes you forward, and how do you get inspired by doing something, you know?
Yeah, I think, look, a lot of the stuff, being that I do focus on a lot of horror and thriller type stuff, that's probably a reflection of me and my own mindset that I'm afraid of everything. So I like to live vicariously through the film and kind of deal with my own demons that way. So
Yeah.
that's why I tend to focus on moodier, darker content for like the horror film type situation. It's almost like, hey, I'm afraid of this, but if I do it through this film, I'm kind of getting my own therapy. So I enjoy that. But what I really love is the artistic side of, you know, playing with the imagery. So it's like, you know, being that I have that illustration background and all that, I do love composition and all of that that goes in the frame. So playing around with that and music videos in particular, you get to play with a lot of styles and different styles. I think I like that for the challenge of telling a different story different ways, and kind of always refreshing. It's almost like training at a gym, you know, you kind of push those boundaries even further. So it's like you set your weight level, then you go a little higher. And that's what I like doing. Like, I like pushing the boundaries, creatively and visually. And I think that's what keeps me going.
Pepsi or Coke?
Pepsi Max, but regular Coke trumps Pepsi Max.
Yeah,
But
100%. That's cool.
I prefer the Pepsi, like I prefer no sugar drinks, so Pepsi Max is better than Coke No Sugar,
Okay.
but Coke trumps all of it. But then I'll also get diabetes, but then the other one's giving me cancer. So it's like, I'll mix and
Hey,
match.
win.
Yeah, you
But
can't win.
which ones are better? So if you were to die tomorrow, what method would be the best way for you to die? Like,
I
what would
would,
you be agreeable
okay, it would be my heart seizing overnight after I've consumed a whole bucket of KFC chicken skin. So it's like,
Yum.
or like at least 5, 6 buckets, I'd just smash that and then my heart
Do
would
you reckon
cease.
you would die from that?
You'd have to, right? Like
How
that
many buckets you reckon?
five of dense
Of
chicken
just
skin.
dead
Like
kid? Oh, for
it's not just
breakfast.
like ripping it off and
Nah,
putting it
man,
in. You'd have
you're
to
probably gonna
crush it down and
Oh, you don't know, the bodies are pretty fucking gnarly then.
your tongue would just be sandpaper by the end of it. But if you've
Do you reckon
got
the Russians have tortured people like that? I reckon.
I'd prefer to take that over waterboarding, that's for sure. So, yeah, death by food for sure. The thing that I love the most.
It's funny because it's funny how I think there's only two, or there's two, they say that there are two breeds, like dogs, dog breeds, Labradors and Beagles. If you put them a never ending amount of food, they will eat till they die.
Eat till I die, yeah.
Fuck that. Dogs or cats?
Dogs. So here's an interesting conversation. I'm not giving you really straightforward answers, but it's like dogs are just more loving. I've got a dog, and Winnie's the best thing that I've ever had in my life. But I've also met really shit dogs. So
Yeah,
it's like
100%.
they're just timid, they'll run away, they'll bark, and all that kind of stuff. But I've never met a really shit cat. Like they're all just consistently, you know.
Consistently shit.
Yeah, just consistently average. No, they're
They
just,
come to you when they're ready.
and like that's the argument. Like people will be like, "Oh, you love my cat? It's like a dog." And it's like, well, then just get a fucking dog, you know. So I don't get that argument.
And if your
So
cat's like a leopard and it's twice the size of a dog, then
then you're
okay.
fucked. Yeah,
Yeah, I don't mind that. Yeah.
it'll look cool, but then you could be fucked at any point. So
Lions or
nah,
tigers?
lions, they're just majestic looking.
So tell me, when your idea for a film comes up, how do you dissect that, and where do you go? Like, what do you do like, do you put pen to paper? Do you speak to people? Like, do you bounce your ideas off? What happens? Tell me.
So whenever I come up with an idea for a film, I will just kind of come up with a story outline. I'm not a writer director.
You get
Like
inspired by books mainly, or?
I'm inspired by true events, sometimes inspired by other films,
Okay.
but more often than not, it's a conglomeration of all of that. So it's like everything just comes together. So you know, even if it's like a specific fear, you know, it's like, or I have like a nightmare or something, I'll
Yeah.
kind of pen it down. And then I will talk to different writers, and
Okay.
if there's one that wants to bite on that subject matter, that's what would happen. So at the moment, I have four different writers developing different things that are stories that I wanted to kind of tackle. So one guy, Shane Wangman, I've always loved slasher films. So he's kind of tackling that. There's like a film that's more orientated in the dance world, and I've got Peter McLeod working on that. So it's the thing is to have many things in the basket so that when you start pitching it to distributors, sales agent, production houses, they might not vibe with one, but they might go for another. So I want to take like an arsenal of things, but generally from a creative perspective, I will always kind of approach someone and be like, hey, this is the kind of film I want to make. This is the story. And I'll sometimes break it down and then they'll figure out a better way of telling that story that's not so A to B.
Yeah, okay. And so tell me more about these fears that you have. What are your fears?
My biggest fear? Biggest fear, I'm afraid of everything, but biggest fear is death, ultimately, or zero consciousness, more than anything else. And I know that's like an oxymoron where it's like, well, if you don't know, you won't know. So what are you afraid of? And it's like...
But we wonder.
Yeah.
I thought about it this morning.
Yeah.
But I think about it all as well.
Yeah. Every day. Not twice a day. Like, it's just like...
It's there.
What if it's just lights out and that's it, you know? And then...
What
was the point of it all? Like, I don't want to... And then, you know, you'll have people that will argue very valid points, which is like, well, you've not existed longer than you've existed. And that's fair. But it's like... But I love life and I love everyone around me. And it's not just a reflection of myself, it's other people as well. It's like, even my mum, it's like she's lived such a selfless life where she's looked after every one of us and done so much for us. She deserves to be rewarded with something than just lights out and curtains close, you know, kind of thing. So I think that's just a depressing thought. So, you know, with that fear comes every other fear. So it's like my fear of flying. It's like I've got no control over it. So I think it'd be like the lack of control of not having my own path to choose. So it's like, example being death, zero consciousness. I've got no control over that. Fear of flying. I'm not behind the cockpit. Yeah.
But don't you find that there are methods? Because you fly.
Yeah.
How many times did you fly
last year? Last year was 42 flights.
42 flights,
yeah.
Right? Okay. Yeah. So... on those 42 flights, you weren't shitting there. You're shitting yourself on every single flight.
But, like, it's kind of like an awkwardness. So, like, I'll pick it, like, you know, my cuticles or something like that. Okay. It's just, like, I'm always on edge. So it's, like, whilst everyone else is able to shut down and just go with the flow, I'm, like, you know, fidgeting and, you know, just uneasy.
I had that for a while as well, especially when I started flying a lot with work. You know how I got over it? I would... remind myself around Rain Man and about how you'd always bring up
the Qantas, so you fly with Qantas all the time.
And
I've done that too.
Sure I wore Rockstar headphones on.
Yeah.
And I thought I was a Rockstar coming onto the flight.
Yeah.
And so, I think that this flight would never think I'd call everyone by their first names. I'd feel as it make me I trick myself.
Yeah.
Feeling comfortable.
Yeah.
That's how I got over it.
I don't have any of those methods. I have done the Qantas thing, right. Which is but now I'm flying Virgin everywhere. So it's like they've been great so far, but it's just and now I take the little wins, which are actually losses. So what I do is if there's a delay, I'm like, that's my bad luck. Or if they lose my luggage, I'm like, that's my bad luck. Or if I'm sitting next to someone not really that great, I'm like, that's my bad luck. But if everything's going perfect, I'm waiting for that little moment for it to be the bad luck, which is a mid-air collision.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
as a plane goes over my head.
Thank
yeah.
You. So obviously being an artist, and being an artist myself, we love getting in our own way.
Yeah.
So you're in your own head a lot.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And what do you? Is there any methods that you do that gets you, you know, that allows you to progress and think, you know, ahead of what you're...
Is it like more if I'm in my own headspace and it's causing roadblocks?
Yeah.
And so if I'm in my own headspace and it's causing roadblocks, I tend to I'll step away for a little bit. So it's like, that's where you have hobbies. So it's like, I'll do like a bit of dance or I play video games. And then that way I can just sort of shut down for a little bit. Even a nap sometimes works, which I'm like getting into, but it's anything that will create that point of distraction. Sometimes it's just so overwhelming and even overnight you're just consuming it. And then the imposter syndrome sets in where it's like, am I good enough or am I real in this field or do I belong here? But ultimately that does pass, which is like the good news. And there are points of distraction that help that. But I think even without the distraction, it always, you sort of overclock it and you're just like, you know what, I've just got to do the work. And then when you do the work, it's done. And then that's your kind of trophy for it at the end. And then whatever happens from that, the accolades or whatever it might be, they're all bonus. But like, if I've got the finished piece at the end, that's what helps soothe every other thing.
Yeah. So what's what are your hobbies? Tell me.
What do I do? Do I smoke billies? No. Yeah, I have. It's almost like bass statements. It's like every once a quarter, you know. Yeah. So it's like I'll do it just to relax, and usually it's just to mellow out and enjoy films, because I'm watching movies and I'm watching them and not critiquing them, but I'm analyzing them. I'm like, oh, that was an interesting shot choice, and that was I like what the director did there. But when I do smoke weed, I actually enjoy it for the movie it is. So I can sort of get the illusion back, which is great. Aside from that, hobbies-wise, it's literally going out to dinner. I love fine dining. I love dining out with my wife, you know. So Carly is awesome. She's like my best friend. Playing with Winnie. It's really just, I haven't changed from high school. You know, it's like me going to a mate's house and watching like three films back to back and eating pizza and burgers and all that. I know that's like a pastime, but it's like, I enjoy that, you know? So I don't have too many hobbies other than like gaming, I guess. But and I love going to gigs and watching bands play music and all that kind of stuff. So music is a really helpful distraction. But I guess my hobby now became the career path I didn't want, which is art. And so like I'll find myself drawing, illustrating, and doing that just for the fun of it, not being that a client is paying me to do it.
Super Nintendo or Sega?
I grew up with Mega Drive.
Ooh.
Yeah, but if I'm gonna be real, Nintendo had more replay value with their games. So it's like, I love the Mario worlds and all that kind of stuff, and Donkey Kong was amazing, but Aladdin on Mega Drive was way better than Aladdin on... Yeah, because I later on I played both platforms, and there's some killer games on Mega Drive that Super Nintendo just couldn't match. And Mortal Kombat was better on Mega Drive. It had all the blood, and Super Nintendo didn't.
Too.
Yeah.
Nah, Super Nintendo, you could bring the codes.
No, that was, I think, the second one. The first one didn't have that. You couldn't have it. So you'd like rip off people's heads, but it wouldn't be... it'd literally be like an uppercut, and that would be it. Whereas the Mega Drive had all the gore, but you could kind of bypass with the code.
Compound bow death or spear death?
Both suck. They're both impaling. Maybe the bow, it's thinner? Quicker and thinner. The spear's like pretty hectic, unless it goes through your brain.
Yeah.
Like
side of the temple.
Yeah.
What's the most mediocre film that you've ever seen?
I don't trash on films. Okay.
Yeah, but you have to.
There was one thing that made me laugh. It was a reviewer that called Tag the most mediocre film ever made. But I enjoyed that. Mediocre. What can I say? It's like, I don't know. I love Marvel cinema, and I love all of them pretty much. And I love to just shut down and enjoy them. But I think just seeing like some of these superheroes that I used to look at in comics come to life is quite enjoyable. So there's a bias there.
Yeah.
But the last few have felt kind of formulaic. You know, it feels like it's the same thing. But I still enjoy them. Most mediocre film. What can I can't really pinpoint it. I won't even trash bad films, because bad films are sometimes good. Like even The Room, which is like, I will watch that. If anyone invites me over and is just like, hey, do you want to watch The Room? I'll watch that, despite how incredibly bad and poorly made that film is. Or was it so genius that they wanted to make it bad but made it so good at the same time?
But who knows?
You'll never know. He claims, Tommy Wiseau claims that he made it intentionally for that. But
and what else has he done?
Nothing. No, they made so another film. They made another film, but I haven't seen it. So okay. Maybe another couple films, but yeah. Yeah, he, just him as a creature is interesting, you know, like his existence. Like, have you seen The Disaster Artist? That's like, yeah, it's like a really intriguing take on him. Like, he claims that he made all this money selling leather jackets, but you don't have $6 million selling leather jackets. Otherwise, everyone would sell leather jackets.
100%.
So, like a yeah, he's got like, apparently just had like an infinite well of money. And it's like, but he also claims that he's from... He was born in America, but he wasn't. I think he might be Polish or something like that. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. And he's got an accent that doesn't suit anything, so...
Wild.
Yeah.
So, just to backtrack a little bit, with... Do you think... Like, you went to university and studied.
Yeah.
What did... What do you think that brought to your skill set? Do you reckon that... do you reckon going to uni helped?
For me, it did. I don't recommend it for everyone. I think people are talented enough and, you know, like they're in tuned enough to like be able to go on their own path. It's like been proven through Richard Linklater and Kevin Smith and all those guys that didn't go to film school. I don't even think Tarantino really went to film school. And you've got like marvelous movies that they've made. For me, it helped me from a disciplinary kind of standard where I was able to go in, focus my time and pretty much do it, because I think the idea of failing an assessment is worse than me just having like an open timeline. So from that perspective, it helped. From the other perspective of networking, I got to meet really amazing people like Carl Allison, who's my DP. We met through that course, you know, so it's like, that's just the most valuable thing to him. He thought, tertiary education was a waste of time. He thought he was wasting time, and he says that the only valuable thing he found was me.
Yeah.
But I think there was a lot of good that I found out about it, and even just listening to other lecturers' stories, and some of those lecturers like Alethea Jones, who then goes out and starts making television in the US, is just like so inspirational. And it's like, well, I found a lot of inspiration through it, so for me it was quite valuable. But you know, towards the end, I was using it for equipment base kind of, you know, utilizing the equipment,
yeah,
you know,
of course.
But like, I thought it was valuable to me, but I don't think that it's doom and gloom. So if you can't get into a film school, you don't have to do it. You can just make your own films. I think there's more value in making stuff than anything that you can learn at a uni or a TAFE, but there's also guidance that comes with that. So if you fail at something, then you can get expert opinions on like, hey, you could have done it this way. So.
Scallops or oysters?
Oysters. Kilpatrick. Is that what it's called?
Nah, fuck Kilpatrick. Kilpatrick's like
the
entry level way to eat.
No, I like, love that. I love that. But I do love oysters just on their own.
Yeah.
But I do love a Kilpatrick. That's like, yeah.
Yeah.
That's like, so, hey, let's take something good and fuck it up and make it really unhealthy. And I still enjoy that too. So it's like, again, it's like fine dining. I love fine dining, but I also love KFC. And it's like,
KFC.
Macca's is irrelevant now. It's like, with all the amazing... Hungry Jack's is okay, but it's like, the Whopper's good. Double Whopper or the triple... the double bacon cheeseburger is awesome too. But it's like, Macca's kind of... there is one good burger at Macca's, and it's getting a double quarter pounder, taking out the ketchup mustard, and putting in three shots of Big Mac sauce. It is the best. It is the best.
So tell me, so... With the genre that you love of films, who is it that inspires you the most as a director and, you know, from the past?
Yeah, it's tough. It's like there's so many points of inspiration. Kevin Smith inspired me from an independent filmmaking side of things. Eli Roth is in there as well, which was like he did his first feature film on almost nothing. But I'd say the most inspirational of all of them would be James Wan. Okay. So it's like... You know, was here doing these, you know, was here studying, made a film, and has now taken over Hollywood essentially with all. And I, to this day, I'm I don't think he's made a bad film. Like, every film is, like, awesome, you know, and it's exactly what it needs to be. So between him and Lee Whannell, those two, and they've parted ways directing-wise, they've both made incredible films. So it's like you could flip a coin between those two.
Where do you want your career to go? Where do you what do you see for yourself?
I just want longevity. I want to work, and like I'm in a really comfortable and awesome position right now. But as an artist, or like a filmmaker, you're never satisfied. There's always something wrong with it, you know. So I just want to just keep leveling up and just doing something better than my last. So whether that takes me to studio productions in Hollywood, or whether it's still on an independent level, or whatever it might be, I just want to just keep leveling up.
And
just,
where do you see that? Where do you see that level up?
I see that just in the project itself. Okay. So, you know, if I can tell a creator, like, you've seen films that are just so amazing, like Buried, which is just within one environment. Then you see spectacular films like The Shawshank Redemption and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, well, they're two totally different films and two totally different things, but they're both awesome in their own right. So I just want to tell the next thing that I really want to be able to tell, do it well, and then move on to the next thing that's even better than that. Like, whether that's through the experience of making it or whether it's through the final product, I just want to just keep working.
And can you tell me who you are?
I'm nobody. I don't feel like, honestly.
Just yourself, because we didn't do that.
I'm Nick Kazakis, and I'm a director. Do you want more in depth on that, or?
What if you want
to?
I'm going to cut this.
So. Yeah, no. Like, if you open up with that, I don't know. I'm Nick Kazakis, and I'm a director. I work in film, narrative, music videos, and commercials.
Say it. I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
Unless you went with your dad.
No, not really. Like, what else can I say? It's like
I was pretty good. I wanted to go more into like the fear stuff.
Yeah. You can if you want. I can tell you how I don't fit in anywhere. It's like I've never fit in.
What do you mean you don't fit in?
I've never fit in, like, hang on, I'm just wetting them out.
Miller
might need to use the toilet, maybe? No?
I think she's just wanted to open the door for you. Really? What do you mean you
actually
need? Like, what is that?
Fitting in. It's like...
Should you fit in?
Yeah, I guess that's probably the only time I've ever felt like I fit in, but even then, I do it a bit differently. So I guess, so in my own family, being the accident child, I've always been between two different generations.
Okay.
So it's like, you know, my older brothers are like way older. It's my oldest brother could have been a Jack Nicholson situation. He could be my dad, you know, that I don't know. My parents are much older. My brothers are older. And then I've got second cousins and nephews and all that kind of stuff that are like closer to me in age than that. So it's like I've always felt like in between, even just like social cliques at school. So it's like, you know, I was with the European kids, but then I'd like the music of the Aussie kids or the white kids, you know, kind of thing. And then, you know, like even just me as a person, it's like love fine dining, love KFC. I love sport. I love dance and theater. Yeah, so it's like I love fashion, and it's like you would see me at an AFL game being feral as like a Pies supporter, and then I would go into a fashion runway and then like enjoy that and love that and like have like all these clothes, even to the point where I even have like women's items because they don't have them in men's, you know. So it's like I don't fit into any category, but that's why.
You made your own category.
And that's exactly it. So it's like a lot of that inspiration comes from you, to be honest. And I'm not just saying that because it's like on camera. It's because you've had a very zero fucks given attitude on everything. And or that's the perception that I get. And it's just like, I am who I am, you know? And like later years, I've adapted to that. You know, it's like there's a few people that have inspired me and they wouldn't think it. But like I sort of keep it close to my mind. Even like the fact that you mentioned Michael Awad, where it was like, he stacked his Supra. He fell asleep at the wheel, stacked it completely. And then the next day he came over to my house and I didn't even know we were going out. And he's like, I'm like, where's your car? And he's like, oh, I smashed it. I'm like, what? And I'm like, when? He's like, yesterday. I'm like, and you're here? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, are you not depressed? Are you not upset? He's like, well, what happened? And I'm like, I can't live like that. I'll be thinking about that for months. If I say something wrong to someone, I will think about that till the day I die. But it's moments like that where he was just like, it is what it is, that sometimes I do bring that into my own lifestyle. I'm just like, it is what it is, you know, kind of
thing.
It
goes back to that getting out of your own head and out of your own way.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah.
It's those little nuances that we find to,
yeah,
to get that, you know, out of our own head.
And I don't want to part too far away, but it's like, even with you, it's like, you've done whatever you've done. Like, I've met you in different points of your life where, you know, and again, I'll be real about that, where I remember the moment when I was doing graphic design and graphic art and I was working full time and I bumped into you at Century City and you were doing 3D animation, but you were sort of transitioning out of that, or you were wanting to get into that. And that conversation was like, well, if he can change it, then I should change it, you know? Mm-hmm. So, and that was like, you know, things that have stuck with me. It's a long time. This memory never fades.
It's around on 3D Max.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Like when 3D Studio Max, yeah.
Yeah, and I was on photography as well.
So that was like, you know, and watching you do your changes and, you know, evolving as an artist and all that kind of stuff. It was just like, well, and not giving a shit about what anybody thinks and doing whatever you want to do. It was kind of like, you know what? I'm going to do the same. So I was like, you know, no longer was I like a kid afraid of judgment, you know, where it was like, I've always loved dance. And, you know, and then I never pursued it because I thought it'd be demonized or looked down upon. And it's like, you know what? Now I'll fucking do tap, because it's like something that I really... Yeah, so I've been doing that for like the past few years. And it's because it's the only type of music where you can create music. Well, like the only type of dance where you can create music, you know, everything. Yeah, exactly. So it's like... So it was just like something that I'd always loved, even just from like the drumming side of things, because I've always loved metal and you're creating a beat, you know? So it's like, that is something that I loved. And then from there, I've been able to appreciate, it's not all just like jazz hands type shit. You find out through the roots of slavery, how dark that history is and all that. So it's not just like the goofy, you know, person that's on stage. There is a darkness, and that's what's inspired the next film, because I want to bring a depth to that genre of dance that hasn't been seen before, you know, where it's like, it's not just like, hey, we're gonna make it the comic number, you know. Now it's like, you see someone dancing and tapping and they're putting their fucking soul into it, and you can see how dark it is for them. Like, I dated someone that was a tapper, and the depths that her mind would get into, it was darker than any horror film that I could actually ever make, you know. So it's like, I really want to get into the psychology of a dancer that just happens to do that. And then you suddenly have Whiplash. 5 years ago, I couldn't give a fuck about jazz drumming. Now, I appreciate it more because of that film.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. The way they showed, you know, the striving to perfection.
Exactly. You know, that. Like, if you see jazz drumming, it's like, you know, and it's like, that's what you think it is. You know, like snake jazz from like whatever that show is, Rick and Morty. But then I see that and I'm like, holy shit, I never thought of how dark it could be to have a mentor that's helping you strive for greatness, but also being abusive at the same time. And what's the right answer? Because he hit that point of greatness, you know, but was that all like,
worth it?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But everyone's seeking, like, hey, I think, you know, there's a lot of people who are seeking greatness in our space.
Yeah.
Don't know how to get there.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people don't want to. They don't have that drive.
Yeah.
It's
also torturous thinking about like hitting greatness, because what is that? You know, it's like,
you can make it, I guess.
Exactly, yeah. It's like, I think, again, the tortured artist or the tortured director type thing. It's like, I make something, I enjoy it, and then people compliment it, and then I'm like, that's cool, but I only see the flaws, you know? Yeah, so it's like, you only see like where you could have done better or where you could have cut better or framed better or shot better or performed better.
So it's literally like living in the present. You've got to be present.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And that's why productions are so important to me, because you can enjoy them during that time. When it's finished, it's almost like you get that hangover of like, oh, well,
now what?
Yeah, and then you look at it and it's like, oh, well, I could have done this better. I got to get into another production. And then you're kind of fueling this vicious cycle. But I don't know, it's still fun somehow, in some way. But also in a dark perspective of it. So, yeah.